Blog Talk Radio.
Hopefully they won't disconnect me.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. I'm your host. This is MJ Network. MJ after my sister, who I miss, Marcia Joyce. And it's going to snow today. And it's freezing outside, people. But this is going to be fun, and, you know, those of you that like scary, author Shannon Kirk takes us deep inside the mind of Mags and other women who thought that they could provide what a young girl needed, but which one will win? Gretchen, oh, my God, wait till you meet her. She'll scare the daylights out of you, this kid. So good morning. How are you? And welcome to MJ Network, I think.
Thank you, Fran. Glad to be here. I love your intro to Gretchen. I like that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, Gretchen is enough to scare people. And basically, you wouldn't want your kid to be friends with her, but you never know. So when you created this novel, why did you focus on two teens, which I thought was really cool? See, what's great about Shannon's books is that they're not like everybody else. And they're different, which makes it so much easier that it's not the normal stuff. And why jigsaw puzzles? I love jigsaw puzzles as a fetish for the main character. Oh, my God, that was scary. I may never do another one again.
Well, thanks. So, let's see. I picked a focus on two teens probably because I think when I think back on being a teenager, that's a pretty scary time. It's just, there's just such a cataclysm of emotions and growing up and coming to realization of things. And, you know, our main character, Lucy, has to come to some major realizations and battle some pretty serious emotions. So, you know, I wanted to bake it into the two characters. And then as for why puzzles, so I thought,
yeah,
you know, I one of the psychological issues that I wanted to tackle in this book was obsession. And anything can be an obsession, right? Like literally anything
yeah.
can be an obsession. It doesn't make it a bad thing in its own nature, right? There's a lot of obsession, mm-hmm. I think, around games. And that can be totally healthy. Like a lot of people have healthy love of jigsaw puzzles. But like with anything, if you have an obsessive personality, like Gretchen, you might take it a little too far. So I just picked, I don't know, I picked jigsaw puzzles because there's a lot of symbolism, I think, in using that when you take it too far, such as cutting things up, right?
Yeah.
Making a picture out of something that becomes grotesque. So that was my motivation behind that.
It was scary, let me tell you. And when you see Gretchen's pictures and you meet her, are you going to want to hide outside the book? Even though you're going to get inside the book? No, seriously. So you've got Lucy, and she really didn't have a secure life for 13 years. She was uneasy a lot. So how would you compare her to Gretchen? And it's scary that they even would even want to be in the same place. But how would you describe Lucy? And why did she always feel like something... there was something missing in her life, but she wasn't sure what it was.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, wow, you're the first person to ask me that question, I love. I've been waiting for somebody to ask me this question, which is, how do you compare Lucy with Gretchen,
yeah,
right? And at the core, they've got a lot of similarities, even though they're wildly different, right? Both.
Mm-hmm.
Are the product of single-parent environments, number one. They're both very, very isolated. They both struggle to have friends, and for different reasons, but they both are very lonely in a way. And both are very dependent on the parental figure in their life. And I set it up, and so that was intentional. I wanted them to both have that same environment of growing up. And then the question is, right, because they say psychology is in part heredity and in part environment, right? So if the two have the same general environment, right, what does that mean for them as people as they are coming into their own blossoming into adulthood? And clearly it means very different things for the two different girls, even though they had somewhat of a similar similar components, I guess you could say, to their environmental upbringing.
Well, they both
they
both wanted to be friends. They had nothing. Gretchen lived with her father, and she lived with her mother, in quotes.
Yep.
So why did this person, this mother, tell her that she was kidnapped by her father and she took her back? And then you meet the father, and he scared me, let me tell you. Oh, God.
Well, the pianist, Gretchen's father.
Yeah.
So he's, to me, he is just such a sick, twisted, sick man.
Yes,
he's
he is.
He's actually somebody who, you know, he's really just a compilation of psychological disorders, the main one being excessive codependency. And so he's the kind of psychology that would slip into, you know, a cult. He's the kind of psychology that would follow a cult leader, right? And cults are a theme in the book. So I just always find that that particular psychology, whatever that brain makeup is I really study it actually a lot. I read and watch as much as I can on cults because I don't understand it. It scares the hell out of me how anybody could fall for a cult or a cult leader. And so, and he is that. That is Jerry, Gretchen's father.
Well, some of them, maybe they're insecure. Some of them need somebody just to tell them what to do. And it's scary, really scary. Because there are different kinds of cults. And when they start, you know, passing them around, oh, my God. That's even scary. And why in heaven blazes would Lucy want to live there? Why did she convince her, that person, like, why would you? And then he has rules. Excuse me.
Right. So, yeah, so I think Lucy, like, you know, they've been on the run. Lucy and her mom have been on the run for 13 years, and this is their 11th state. It's New Hampshire. And, you know, other than Gretchen, it's actually a really quaint environment, right? You've got this beautiful little village with all of the great little boutique stores and cafes and a gourmet grocer, and it's got that New England vibe with, you know, the white church with the spire and all the beautiful environment. And it's just it's an 8-minute bike ride for Lucy to go from the center of downtown where she gets a job to this little rental that she has in the rural part of this town. Gretchen is there, and Gretchen's the landlord with her dad. And so, but why would Lucy want to stay there? I think that Lucy, you know, she's 15, almost 16, and she's tired, and she's starting to see the cracks in the wall that a lot of kids start to see with their parents as they come into their own age, right? They start to see their parents as not perfect. And they start to question things, and they start to want independence. And this is, even though Lucy feels that it's dangerous, this is her act of rebellion to stay. So staying is an act of rebellion for Lucy.
Yeah, but there are rules in this house, too. rules of living there, and then there's rules in the land, which is really scary. They're only allowed to go to certain places. He takes them around, but basically they can only stay in one spot. They're not supposed to go and search around.
Right.
Which is even scarier. No. Yeah. I would have left this. Oh, my God.
No, right.
It's scary. So we've got Gretchen personality, and Lucy moves in, and how does Gretchen decide that she's going to control Lucy and what she does? And then she decides that she's going to invade her space, and she tries to stop her, and wait till you meet the real Gretchen. How did you create that? I mean, ooh, I got the chills just thinking about it.
So Gretchen, the Gretchen character and her really overriding, domineering personality, she's a compilation of actual people in my life who, you know, I call them, you know, I'm 46 now, so I've met a few of them along the way, and I call them boundary jumpers, right? They are people who immediately, upon meeting you, assume levels of intimacy that they haven't earned yet, right? And it's always very creepy. And if you are an empath or a person, you know, if you are a kind person at nature, you're taken aback because you immediately want to set up boundaries with this person and hard one. But you also want to be kind, right? So it's this creepy dissonance that you feel when you come upon a boundary jumper. But also, right, it's also threatening because writing from the woman's perspective, whether it's a woman or a man who is a boundary jumper, you feel a physical threat, right, when you come upon people like that. Because you're thinking, at least I do, like, oh, wow, if they've already jumped to this level of intimacy and I've just met them, right, if I engage with them, if I allow an opening, what's next, right? Are they going to, like, creep up to my window at night while I'm trying to sleep and knock on the window?
Scary, I know. Yeah.
And so that's how I came up with her, with Gretchen.
What about Gretchen and her father? And at times when I'm reading this, I'm saying, like, Gretchen's father is afraid of Gretchen. She sort of, like, runs the roost. And then there's the mother related to Lucy, and she's not normal either.
Yep. No. They're not normal at all. I think it's so Jerry, Gretchen's dad, is starting to realize that he may have created a monster with Gretchen, right? Like, because of his own, he's not self-aware to realize that he is the one who created the environment for Gretchen to become so mentally ill. He's not that self-aware, but he's aware enough to know that he's got a problem on his hands, and it's scaring him. And throughout the course of the book, a normal father, or a father who was self-aware, maybe might get Gretchen some help, right? But that's not Jerry's solution.
It's scary. I mean, then you have a chapter, I have the book in front of me, people. It's like looking at me and saying, open me, or else you're going to have a problem. The chapter that says mother, that's like another voice. So they've got Gretchen, they've got Lucy, and then you have this other chapter. How did you create that without telling anybody who that is?
Yeah, so I had to, you know, without giving anything away, I do have two voices in the book, and one is mother and one is Lucy. And so that took a little bit of editing, actually, because I used to have sort of three points of view. I had another point of view set of chapters, but we condensed it. My editor suggested I condensed it down to just the mother point of view, and I agree. It took a lot of work, actually, to do that redraft. Obviously, if you take an entire point of view set of chapters and have to bake them back into other just two, it was extensive edit. But I agree with how it came out. And I came up with that because, you know, the mother character is and becomes really one of the leading characters in the book. It's Lucy and Mother, and they are the main characters of this book.
And you get to have a different perspective, and that's all I'm going to say about that one. Well, you've got the relationship is toxic, and Lucy gets a job at Dyson's. And this provides her, she meets Dally. Why does she trust him and she tells him certain things that she wouldn't tell anybody else? And I was like, is she going to ever find anybody that she can trust? Is there anybody that's not going to, you know, try to hurt her? So how come, how did you create him? I like this color.
Oh, thanks. I love Dolly. I love Dolly. So Dolly's another one. It's sort of along the same lines of, so there's the boundary jumpers that I just talked about, right? The people who immediately jump to a level of intimacy. And they exist. And there's it, and it's, but then there's also really great people who you meet and you immediately know. You immediately know in your own instinct that they're a good person and you want to be around them. And it's instantaneous, right? It happens once in a while. And that's just reality. And so Dolly is a character that is competing somewhat for Lucy's ability to accept new people in her life, right? She's got this sort of armbar brace to Gretchen, but she also wants to embrace Dolly, who on instinct, she immediately knows is a good person and is a Jenny, right? So one of the themes in the book is that she calls these really wonderful souls that once in a while run across, calls them all Jennies, whether they're male or female. And she knows that Dolly is a Jenny. And Dolly, I put into the book really as a safety net. And when readers are reading in a chapter and Dolly is there, it's meant to be a comfort amongst all the other horror that's going on.
I know, she finally realizes it. But she realizes that Gretchen and Jerry are crazy. But what is Gretchen? Yeah, they're crazy. What does she want her to do when they're together? That's even scarier, just going into her room and whatever. What exactly does she want to do with Lucy? It's like a very mind control kind of situation that said, oh, my God, I don't want to go near Gretchen ever.
Right. Well, I think Gretchen, what she wants from Lucy is not true friendship, right? What she really wants.
No,
what she really wants is to control her. She wants control. I mean, it really always, pretty much a lot of psychological ailments come down to control and whether you can assert control over something or somebody or some object. And I think if we were to study Lucy's psychology, we would realize she's been in this broken environment her entire life, her isolation, and she wants control. So she wants to control Lucy.
They both sort of want to control something, and then Lucy has no control over anything, sort of.
Right.
Although she decided, and she's probably going to regret the fact that she decided to stay there, but what can I say? So tell us who is Carly? And that's another voice that I like. And she reminds me of my niece, Carly.
So Carly is a strong woman character, a supporting character in the book, and she is another sort of an older version of a Jenny, right? Sort of this self-contained, independent, strong woman character who is really there to add layers of strength to a main character, right? So when you have when you have a strong female lead, right, I like to ask, okay, well, who are the supporting characters in her life that bolster her strength? Because I believe that it's pretty rare to have a strong character of mind and body without at least some foundation to help them. There's certainly some great strong women out there who are you know, independently on their own from, of course. I'm not saying there's not.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that in a lot of ways, in a lot of settings, it's a team effort. And you have either strong friends
mm-hmm.
or strong family supporting you in some way or some kind of backstop. So that's the Carly character. I love Carly. Carly would be my best friend.
That's exactly right. I agree. That's why I said it. That's why I brought her up.
Mm.
But I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at page, we're on my 336, and I'm going to say, this is like strange. Gretchen introduces her to games and puzzles. How did you create that scene? And it's not like normal games and puzzles. I mean, I told you, jigsaw puzzles, I just like my niece wanted to give me one to, you know, to play with her. I go like, no. I'll pass on this one. Nope.
That scene where Gretchen, yes, introduces Lucy to the world of puzzles. So
mm-hmm.
a cool story behind that is I do puzzles here and there, but I'm not a puzzler, which is, I've learned
mm-hmm.
that's what folks who do puzzles a lot are called. And so I got a book by a wonderful woman. I have her in the acknowledgments, who is a professor up at Bates College, and she wrote an entire
mm-hmm.
book on puzzles, the history of puzzles, the puzzle world, the whole thing, right? It's called
mm-hmm.
The Jigsaw Puzzle. And it's by Dr. Anne D. Williams. She's a professor. She's lovely. And the book is really, really good. It's by Berkeley Books. So I read this book because I wanted to be accurate about the world of puzzles and puzzlers. I wanted to know the history. I wanted to be like, I wanted to get in the mind of Gretchen, right? Because Gretchen,
mm-hmm.
being so obsessed, she would know all these facts about puzzles. So that's why I read it. So when I learned that Professor Williams was just up at Bates, that's only about a two-hour drive from my house, I contacted her and I asked if she would allow me to interview her. And she was super gracious. She invited me up to her home up in Maine. So I went up and she made me this awesome little lunch with this huge chunk of cheese in the sandwich. It was really good. And we sat at her little kitchen table, and I asked her a bunch of questions about the book and about puzzles and everything. She happens to have, if not the largest, one of the largest puzzle collections in the world. And she's actually a world-renowned puzzle expert. It's so cool.
Oh, wow.
And she was, you know, telling me all about everything. So then she said, well, do you want to know, do you want me to teach you how to cut a puzzle and make a puzzle? And I said, well, hell yeah. So
mm-hmm.
she then said, okay, come down to my basement. And I did have a moment of thinking, wait a second, this is now a horror movie, right? Where this sweet woman, and it's just
yeah.
us in the home, she's going to trap me in her basement in New England and make a puzzle out of me. But so my imagination ran away with me. So I go down to her basement, which wall to wall, filled with shelves of puzzles. And she had this cool table set out of pictures that she was going to make into puzzles. And then she had this jigsaw, right? The Rockwell
mm-hmm.
jigsaw, which I put in the book. And it was, you know, an antique version, but it still functioned. And she told me all the different parts. Showed me how to cut a puzzle piece, and I cut a puzzle piece out of plywood. And so that, all of that, that whole atmosphere of puzzles everywhere, using the jigsaw, I obviously fictionalized and exaggerated, but that's how I created that whole scene of Gretchen introducing Lucy to puzzles.
Well, what kind of puzzles, because they were scary, what kind of puzzles did Gretchen have? And how do you know that they were not regular, normal jigsaw puzzles with lovely pictures and frames and stuff like that? Seriously.
Right. According to Professor Williams' book, The Jigsaw Puzzle, and according to Professor Williams herself, when I interviewed her, one of the bits of information that stayed with me is that typically puzzles are happy themed. They're not crime or they're not horror typically. I mean, there's definitely some, you know, there's definitely some subsets that cater to that for sure. But on whole, puzzles in the commercial world are supposed to be happy or landscapes or beautiful paintings or things like that. Gretchen's collection in different spots in her big house are definitely not happy, and they're definitely not your run-of-the-mill commercial puzzles. And so she has to make her own puzzle. She gets high-resolution photographs from the internet, right? And she has a process with her dad on making puzzles.
That is scary. And what did Lucy think when she saw these puzzles? How did she react to them? Because they're scary. God.
So, Lucy is obvious. She's bewildered, and she knows instinctively that it's wrong and weird. But she also has been so isolated for 13 years, she questions her own reaction to it, right? She questions, well, maybe I'm the weird one for thinking this is weird.
Yeah. Well, had Lucy ever seen a jigsaw puzzle before? Well, no.
Yeah.
She never saw any.
Definitely.
She did.
Yeah, she knows what jigsaw puzzles are, sure.
But she's like been sheltered because she moves around a lot. And the one thing she never really had is, you know, school and whatever. How do they deal with school? She was like different places, 11 different places.
Yeah, so she was homeschooled up until age 13. And then at 13, her mom started letting her go to the different public schools that they moved around to. And they have, you know, years before the mother had gotten her a fake identification. And they just they've just slipped through the cracks for 13 years, never got caught. And they roll transcripts from one to the next. They never really stay long in one location for people to start asking questions.
Well, there's another person in this book. I don't know if I want to bring her into it. There's still another person that's hidden away in this book, too, that we have to talk about. So how did Gretchen justify her actions, and then she wanted to take Lucy as prisoner? And what does Lucy do? I mean, she's almost like, I'm going to kidnap you, and you're going to do what I say, and if you don't, I'm going to break your face. Seriously.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, it gets to a point where, you know, Lucy's been probably deluding herself that she can control Gretchen all summer.
Yeah.
Right? But things escalate, obviously, as they tend to do. And, of course, Lucy finds herself in a situation where Gretchen has the upper hand. And so she's got to rely on her own grit to get out of it. She might have some help, right? Which maybe we aren't going to talk too much about, but she might have some help in that regard.
Well, she has only one friend besides that. She has Dally, right? And it depends, you know. What exactly does she do at the store that she's, you know, so good at?
Oh, Dally?
Yeah, Dally. Lucy works too, right? So how does she decide, you know, why there? And she got herself a job too, because she needed money. And I'm surprised the mother let her out of her sight.
Yeah. So Lucy was drawn to one of the sort of threads about Lucy's character that I don't make very, very prominent, but I mention a couple of times. Is that in all of their moving around, Lucy would often be the one who would cook elaborate meals for her mother. So she's grown up being the chef of the house. And she even mentions, I think, that maybe someday she might want to be a chef. She doesn't know. So when she finds out that there's this gourmet organic grocer in the village, her personality is drawn to that. And so that's why she picks working at Dyson's, is the name of the store.
Okay, this I have to ask because I'm on page 281. And Gretchen sends a note. Gretchen sends an email to Lucy that scared the one out of me. The puzzles are made out of human bones? Ew.
Wait, let me see where you are.
These are human bones and they are puzzles. Oh my God, how did you create that? And that's probably the other reason why I'm not going to go near a jigsaw puzzle, because I don't know what they're made of anymore. And I feel like I created a really great game, and I gave you a guide and the best of my latest specimens. How did you create that? And toodaloo, this will be fun. She's like, oh my God. That alone would have told me, let's go escape. How did you just come up with, oh my God. I'm looking at them and go like, oh my God. Whoa, that's scary. Really, seriously.
Well, those are some special puzzles that Gretchen has.
Yeah.
I don't know what I don't even know how to answer that. How I came up with that, because one day I just thought of that particular scene too, and how Gretchen sets it up, and I did ask myself, am I taking it too far? But then as soon as I asked myself that, I was like, I don't care. It's so vivid in my head what Gretchen did and how she set up that particular scene of bone puzzles that I had to write it. Yeah.
Did her father see the puzzles, or wasn't he allowed down there? Did he ever know
doing? Oh, yeah. The father's very much involved in this psychosis. It's a dual psychosis that they're living in, that they have this project. Together. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's another person in this story. Well, one, I want to talk about the person that, whatever. At the end of this, poor Lucy's going to need some help, maybe. So, who is Earl, and what part does he play? And this is another character, like, whoa.
So, Earl is an older gentleman who was the renter at where Lucy and her mom are renting now. He had been a renter there for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a lot of handyman kind of things on the property. And so Earl is amongst the cast as somebody, and I don't want to give anything away, but he may be a victim, or he may be one of the bad guys, or he might be both, right? He might be both victim and bad guy. So that's Earl. And he, again, like teen girls, like Gretchen, actually. Gretchen is a waify, thin, tiny 15-year-old girl. Earl is a grandfather age to Gretchen, and he's also very thin, and his bones are brittle.
Mm.
But those two have mixtures of things in them where you could ask, are they going to end up good or bad, right? Even though physically they shouldn't be a threat. But maybe they've created four things evil. I don't know.
This is scary. This is really scary. I'm just wondering if a psychiatrist would analyze Gretchen, what they would say about her personality and how they would describe Lucy's personality, because there are a few more people involved in this story. I know that. But there's more about the mother and whatever. So how does she come into play with this thing? And I'm looking at this. Oh, my God, this is even scarier.
So the mother is any way you look at the mother character, I guess I'll put it that way. Any way you look at the mother character, that mother character loves Lucy immensely, right?
Yeah.
And the mother character is somewhat representing that like impenetrable mother love, that they would do anything for this child, right? And that can be either healthy or it can be toxic.
I know.
And so when you look at the mother character, right, it's really just sort of that blending of that all overpowering feeling of being a mother and wanting to do whatever it takes to save the child, and then asking along that spectrum, what is toxic, what is selfish, right, because you're dealing with your own past, and what is healthy, and what is over the top, right? So that's the mother character.
Well, there's somebody taunting the mother, but we won't say who. That's taunting her. And then how did you create those stuff in bold? That's on like pages 343 to 345. How did you create that?
It
says, "Are you mad? Are you furious? I would leave you dead in the desert with buzzards to pick you clean." Oh my God. And what would you do? Would you throw your body into a house of flames to save someone? And that's scary. So there's somebody that, you know, is taunting her, and there's somebody that's answering her. How did you create that? Because I said, oh, my God, who else is in this story? And there's a lot of more people, sort of.
Yeah, so that's along that whole letter that's written, like, I would leave you for the buzzards. Yes, so that is that motherly protection where you get to a level of anger, like such incredible rage at somebody else who would even think to harm your child, that you would contemplate murdering them in a really brutal way, right? That you step now outside your regular morals and norms, and now you've taken the step of writing a letter to somebody about your rage. So that's what that's about.
Well, before I forget, on Thursday, The Shape of Night, Tess Gerrinson. This is a scary story, too. On the 19th, the last show for this month, for right now, R.G. Belsky, who we love, T.J. O'Connor, Alan Topol. We're going to talk about, and Jim Nesbitt, we're going to talk about how do you use your real-life occupation in your writing. On the 3rd of December, somebody you know and love too, Matt Coyle, Lost Tomorrow. And on the 5th, one of my favorite people on this planet, John Land, A Time for Murder. He brought out the Jessica Fletcher murders, and he's the one that recreated the Jessica Fletcher murders. I love it. On the 10th, we've got a panel show with Marcia Casper Cook, Alan Topol, Charles Salzberg, and Marilyn Levinson. We're going to talk about something that bothers me, and that's how libraries are supposed to help local authors and bookstores, and up here, they don't do anything. They do nothing. Mm-hmm. So I have to know. I mean, I went into the library and I gave them a copy of my mom's book, A Daughter's Promise, and I gave them a copy of my last book that came out that's very scary, Silent Voices, and they said, you don't have a library journal review, but I had Vincent Dandry that gave me a blurb, R.G. Belsky, John Land, famous people, gave me, you know, blurbs and said the books were good. They wouldn't give it to me if they didn't think it was good. Didn't help. Didn't matter. So I said, oh, well, what the heck. And on the 12th of December, John Land, Reese Hirsch, are going to be with me with Dennis Palumbo, and we're going to talk about how the opiate crisis. We're going to talk about, it's not going to be about the book, it's going to be about the opiate crisis and what we think can be done about it. Michael Embry is going to join us also. And he's a journalist, and Dennis is a psychoanalyst. And it should be interesting, because the first line of defense when you go to any doctor for anything is Percocet, oxycodone, and all the rest of it. And I have to understand a little bit more, and I don't think that. On the 16th, Jill Rosenfeld will be here for The Last Romanoff. And on the 18th, the last show for the year, will be Lou Aragnia, the publisher of one of the publishing companies, and he wrote Birthright. And that's just December so far. We don't even know. So, if a psychoanalyst would have analyzed Gretchen, Jerry, and Lucy, and this other mother, how would you describe this mother that takes care of, that supposedly takes care of Lucy? How did she give her, she didn't give her any kind of, you can get a feeling the whole story that Lucy's uneasy. And
yeah,
that she has
yeah.
a feeling that something is just not right. And yet,
right.
she talks back to her once in a while, but she's afraid of her. How come? I mean, I don't like this mother at all.
Yeah,
I would get rid
no.
of her.
So she's my interpretation of some things that I've witnessed. Not my mother was not like this at all. My mom's very supportive and loving. But some things
yeah.
that I've witnessed in my life of what I call, and I'm not a psychiatrist, child psychologist in any way, shape, or form, but I call it silent child abuse. In the sense
mm-hmm.
that there's not physical abuse, right? There's not scars
mm-hmm.
that we have to deal with. But there's definitely a constant undercurrent of anxiety
mm-hmm.
and strain because a parental figure is battling their own never overcome damage, right? And they lay that upon the child then, and it obviously changes lives. It goes back to that environment that you raise a child in.
Mm-hmm.
That environment is either comforting and loving, or it's filled with anxiety and fear that a parent is going to explode at any minute for some non-rational reason. And so that is the mother. And I personally find that to be a certain kind of horror, right? There's a definite certain kind of horror. I've witnessed it amongst people in my own life. Of having to live like that, and so she is a strong person. She's definitely a very strong person. She's incredibly intelligent. She does have moments of being very kind and very, very loving. There's no doubt she loves Lucy. She really
mm-hmm.
loves Lucy. But the question is, why does she love Lucy, and is she allowing that love to be toxic? I to me, find her just as scary as Jerry.
They all scare. I know. She scared me from page one. And now I'm on page 348. And
okay.
Gretchen sends a note to Lucy. Scary. Who is Mr. Snoof? That's scary. And she said to her, you're a good girl. You finished all your puzzles. I'll make good on the reward. I mean, God help us. This is crazy. I mean, how did you come up with that one? We have about 10 more minutes, whatever.
Yeah. With Mr. Snoof?
Yeah, Mr. Snoof.
Yeah, old Mr. Snoof is he's just a symbol that is part of Gretchen's isolation. So her referring to old Mr. Snoof and what Mr. Snoof is and how he came to be in Gretchen's world is really truly just symbol of her isolation, because a normal child would not have an old Mr. Snoof, right?
Yeah.
And I guess I'm just being a little careful here, so I don't give anything away as to what exactly Mr. Snoof is. Okay,
well, she related it
name.
To something else. She related it to something else that's
mm-hmm.
related to Lucy, but still. Oh my God. It's scary. But there's a reason. I mean, this is like there's a reason with what happened with Lucy. And there's a reason why, you know, everything happened before. And how is Lucy going to define the rest of her life? I mean,
yeah.
if she ever gets away from this lunatic. And
yeah.
how is she going to define the rest of her life? Seriously.
Right. So I actually have given that question a lot of thought, because it was important to me throughout the book, especially the second half and especially the last chapter, to mention that Lucy has a lot of support in the end, and also counseling, access to counselors and therapists,
etc. She needs help, yeah.
Yeah, that was important for me to make sure was a resounding sort of part of the resolution, especially for my teen readers, because with my debut, I've got some readers that follow, even though this is very much an adult book. It's important to me that readers who might be struggling with trauma embrace therapy if they want to, and hopefully it's available to them. And so how does Lucy go on? Obviously, she's dealt with incredible trauma her whole 15 years. And so I would hope that, you know, now that she's in a supportive, you know, I'm not giving anything away, because anybody who's a reader of me knows that all of my books end on a good note. I'm never going to end a book on, you know, the main character dying or at the bottom of a well. That's never going to happen. So, you know, the question for my readers is how do they do it, right, really? So, you know, I would hope that Lucy would take advantage of this great sort of supportive environment that she's been given, and continue to seek therapy to the extent, you know, it's all personal how much, you know, somebody wants to open up in that. And I think that she will become, as an adult, I think that she will be very loving, and she'll have a very limited set of very, very close friends. And that will be her life. She's not going to ever be the social butterfly who has a million different friends. She probably wouldn't join, you know, like I did, a cheerleading squad. That wouldn't fit with her personality, because she's going to probably be guarded the rest of her life and but have very close relationships, the ones that she chooses to have.
Well, I could agree with that. I would think that she would need a checklist for friends. Seriously. I know. My sister did that to me a couple of times. She said, well, this is the checklist we're going to pass to see if the person that, you know, belongs on your list. I said, what about your strange group? Oh, my God. I miss her. She's like, the reason why I have MJ Network is to keep her alive. Seriously.
Oh, I love that. That's wonderful.
And because of Veterans Day yesterday, I don't know where my nephew found the picture of my sister talking, and he texted it to me. I said, that's just what I needed yesterday, is to hear her voice and see her talking. And I just sort of needed that yesterday. I said, you know what? That's cool. It was like, oh, my God. So what about Gretchen? Where are they going to put her? She's completely insane. So
yeah,
how is she going to deal with the rest of her life? She's crazy. And she belongs someplace far away, locked away, where she can't do anything anymore.
Right. Well, so they do cart her off to get the mental health care that she needs, right? That, like, the good thing for Gretchen is probably the best thing for her is separation from Jerry.
Yeah.
And so she's got a long, long, long road of mental health care. Where would Gretchen end up? So part of me had this little, like a 0.25% of me had this sneaking sort of, and my dad asked me to, he's like, are you going to do a sequel where it's just Gretchen?
Yeah, I was going to ask that question. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I thought I could potentially someday agree to, in my mind, to do Gretchen as an adult. But I have so many other things planned that I'm working on right now. I don't like standalones that I don't know. I don't know that I want to go back to Gretchen's world. Not yet.
Well, you'd have to bring Gretchen back with Lucy and have Lucy get even in her world. Take her
right,
that one.
Exactly. Lucy would have.
Well, all I know is that after working in a school for a million years, and I know what child abuse looks like and child neglect, and sometimes it's not physical, it's emotional and mental abuse. And Gretchen was pretty good at it. So I'm just wondering if she became a parent, if she would be the same way.
I wonder the same thing.
Yeah, because I know that I didn't even hesitate. to report child abuse. I knew right away. It was scary. And the scary part is I was never wrong, ever.
God.
And, yeah, I had a little girl walk in to one of my reading groups because I was the reading and writing specialist and the assistant. And she came over to me. She said, look at the purple on my arms. My father did that with a switch. I go, really? Yeah, you had to see her. And I said, okay. And I said, just have a seat. And I called down to the office, called the guidance counselor, and we took care of it. So the father comes in for open school night with the mother, and he says, well, watch what I do next. I said, you're not going to live to find out what happens next because the cops are right here. They're going to take you away.
Oh,
I didn't even hesitate. And I was so nervous because, you know, people get out on bail so weekend long. My husband looked at me and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm calling the house of this child to make sure that she's okay. I called like every couple of hours to talk to the mother to make sure that she was okay. And now she's a parent and she's fine. Then she blames it on me. She says, you're the most wonderful person. But, you know, you don't know. And I turned around and I said, I would rather apologize and be wrong than find out that something, you have no idea, some of the craziness. So what else are you working on and when am I getting it? No, seriously.
Love you. I'm working on a couple things. So Method 1533 was my debut in 2015, and I have the sequel to that coming out in next year. That is called – pardon?
That's good.
It's called Vibery Grove, and I'm just going – I got my dev edits last week, so I'm working through those. And then – I'm also working on a new standalone called The Peculiar House of Fears, F-E-A-R-Z.
Oh, good.
And I love working on this book. And it's all like my other gothic horrors set in New England amongst very obscenely wealthy people. And it mainly centers on the fears oil company family. And anyway, it's fun, having a blast. That's what I'm working on.
Well, I have to tell you, one of my medical providers, the secretary, the host, the receptionist, her son loves me. And he just took Elizabeth Crowan's books. He's in love with The Time Traveler. And I was telling her about yours, so the next time I go there, I have to give that to him, to her, to give to him. He's a teenager. He's 18 or 19, and he's a reader. And I got so excited. I said, this one's going to, your son's going to love. He's going to love me forever. And I told him, I said, you never have to go out and buy a book. Just ask me for it. But I've read some interesting things lately and some not interesting things. And like I said, Tess is Wendy, and I'm interviewing somebody in January. This should be interesting. He wrote a book called, and people got to read this, I'm curious to know what they think, The Chosen One by Walt Craig. And the main character is a young kid that gets forced into becoming a jihadist and to leading the Islamic movement. And by the time he gets brainwashed or whatever, he didn't want to do it. At the end of the book, I said, I got the ickiest feeling. I said, oh, my God, what would happen if the Marines, you know, they fought, blah, 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 the battles were fought, they were really well done. I said, what would happen if he got away? There's a sequel coming. I knew it. I said, you know what, I can't wait to see what he does with it. And I was like, curious to know how he created this kid and if he's based on somebody real. I read another one called Thou Shalt Not Kill, and it said that this author wrote that Osama bin Laden is really not dead. And I was like, are you serious? I said, they find his body. And according to this guy, of course it's fiction, he's someplace and they're being tortured. I was like, oh my God. So those are some. So where could everybody find out more about you when you're working? Are you coming to the Thriller Fest this year?
I am. I'm going to come. I haven't been able to come in the last couple of years, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but
I didn't go last
year
either.
Yeah, but this year I'm gonna be at Grub Street. I think it's in April, and actually the keynote for that is one of my favorite authors, then I will be at Thriller Fest in New York July, and then I will also be at. I just have to do all my registration, SoundTrackCon in Sacramento in October. I think it's October or September. Anyways, well.
So yeah, I saw all the Bacharan things. I saw all of them. I got so jealous that I wasn't there, especially since James Patterson was there. Seriously.
Yeah, there's a lot of really wonderful authors. I always get a lot out of BoucherCon. I really, really, really enjoy that event. So I'll be at all three of those. And then
I'm
going
to be at the Villa Fest probably from Saturday to Sunday, at least one day.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope to see you then.
I hope to see me there too. I know, Vincent Dandry made me promise I would be there. And so did Dick Belsky. My husband was in the hospital last year, so I couldn't go. But hopefully after everything happens and whatever, everything will be fine and we'll be able to go for at least one night. Because I look forward to it. And then it's our anniversary that week, so we go to the Capitol Grill to celebrate. I mean, how often do you get to go to the Capitol Grill for dinner? Seriously.
Right, exactly.
Never. So where can we find out more about you and your work?
Mm-hmm. So my website is shannonkirkbooks.com. I post frequently on Instagram, and I'm also Shannon Kirk Books there. And so I think those are the two best places to get book information about me.
Well,
I'm rarely on Facebook anymore.
Yeah, I see. I limit everything on Facebook too. I only put my reviews, and I gave a couple of awards. Everybody knows I did, and I gave one author whatever, and somebody commented about the fact that I gave Charles Salzberg Male Author of the Year, and because he's such a good guy, and I gave Hallie Efron whatever. And oh my God, that's not good. I just got an email from Dick Belsky. He's not going to be able to come on the 19th for the same reason that, whatever. Okay, I'll have to email him. That's okay. I understand. And it happens. But I want to thank you a million times. This is fun. Do you do panel shows too? Because you never know when I'm going to do one, maybe in February or March, on how you actually write a horror and how you put it together. Because that would help me, because my last book, okay, people, you got to get it for the holidays. Faces Behind the Stone series. My books are told from the point of view of the dead body behind the gravestone.
That's awesome.
My sister died, and I went to the cemetery, and I looked at the gravestone, and I said, if you could tell me why you had a heart attack and what really happened, because there are question marks surrounding it, what would you tell me? So I walked around to the rest of it. I said, Mr. Gold, Mr. Jones, Mr. Whatever, did you do something wrong? Or did you just die of natural causes? Or did somebody put you there? Or are you really there? And I just thought it would be cool to kill off people that way. And in this particular one, the silent voices, the first two stories are real. They're my grandmother's, and how what happened to them was dictated to me. And the rest of them I made up, sort of.
That's wonderful. So, that sounds so great, Fran. I love it.
It's so scary, but you know what? I went and I had a tour with Partners in Crime. I love Cheryl. And I got several people that wrote nice things, and I got the last review was horrendous. And I said to Cheryl, if she posts this on Amazon, I'm calling Amazon. It was so, I don't know who it was that wrote it. It was so insulting, I couldn't believe it. It's like, she didn't like what I wrote, she didn't like my style. I said to her, that's too bad, I don't care.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I've tried to give myself comfort in knowing that every single book that I love to death and think is the greatest thing ever written, they all have one-star reviews. They all have scathing, horrible reviews. And it's fine. It's reviewers. They have, I'm not dinging anybody for whatever review they want to give, but as authors, I've learned my own level of sanity is I won't read them. I don't read anything that's below 4 or 5 stars. I just can't, because it cuts, and it's the only thing I'll think about. And, you know, some people can be really pretty cruel in their reviews.
Yeah.
So they're giving a negative review, which is one thing, and have at it, But then there's just being downright cruel. And I don't.
That's what this was.
Frankly,
that's what this
I don't
was.
Understand that. That's just kind of. So sorry.
I agree with you. I don't write negative reviews. What I found is that a couple of books I've gotten that I felt did not deserve 3.5, they deserve like 2 and 3 stars, and I didn't review it. And what I did was I told the author, I will give you a summary, but I will not write a negative review. I'm not going to pan somebody's work because I might like it and you might hate it, or you might hate it and I may like it. I mean, seriously. It's everybody has their own, but this was really nasty. She criticized my style of writing and everything, and I was like, whatever. And
you know,
yeah.
It's funny. So I had one. I mistakenly read this one review. It was so crazy. It was a 1-star. I'm almost positive it was a troll because the review came on Goodreads before ARCs were even printed, right? So there's no way, right? But anyway, the review said short, truncated sentences, very short sentences. And meanwhile, if you've read my books, I have the opposite problem of that, right? Like you could criticize me for having long sentences and flowery descriptions. Like that would be a legitimate criticism if you don't like that style of writing. But I remember reading that and I thought, okay, I cannot read these anymore because this is all I'll think about because I don't want to argue with that.
No, I agree. I agree with you. I mean, I've had, people that have written, if you look at some of the reviews, seriously, some of them, that they didn't read the book. I got one for Faces Behind the Stone, my first one. I got 25 reviews right away. And some of them were 3, 4, or 5. That's okay. And this girl gave me 2 stars, and she said, I didn't understand what the book is about, and I didn't finish it. I said, then you can't. This doesn't really count. And Amazon wouldn't take it off. And I said, she didn't read the book, so what's the big deal? She didn't understand it. There's one that gave me 4 stars on Amazon and 3 on Goodreads. And then I realized, you're right, there were like 35 reviews for my new book on Goodreads, and I don't even know who these people are. I have no idea.
Well, are they the ones, is your book up on NetGalley? Are they getting it that way?
I don't use NetGalley at all. The publisher just, my publisher's not really doing anything. I'm promoting it myself. So it's not, as far as I know, it's not on NetGalley. I'll have to look. But I know that it's on, it's an e-book, it's whatever, it's on Kindle. People have been buying it.
That's great.
Have been buying the paperback, but, not great. But anyway, we'll try. But I want to thank you so much. This has been fun. Thank you.
Lots of fun. Thanks. It's always fun with you, Fran.
It's fun, and, oh, God, it's snowing. Oh, well, what can I do? Anyway, everybody, have a great day. Stay warm, and bye.
Bye-bye.